Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing 5 a Day. I'm John Allsop. I want to start with the idea of optimization on a kind of an e-commerce site or a site where you want somebody to buy something or sign up or whatever. And you take them from the homepage or whatever landing page and you have this kind of smooth, they call it the funnel, which is where perhaps you need them to create an account, and so they do that, and then perhaps you want them to look at some upsells and downsells, so you do that, and then perhaps you want them to choose their postage, and then you want them to choose their credit card, and you go through all these steps to the final, okay, they've bought, paid the thank you page. And in analytics, you can set that up as a funnel and then watch the statistics and see if any stage of that really puts people off. And then you can go back to that stage and make it better. So you make this kind of smooth, usable slide to getting your credit card out and paying that doesn't wake people up. So from the decision to buy, It's a smooth slide to them buying, and you don't do anything to challenge that decision that they made. So that's kind of just one small part of optimization. And the the book called Call to Action, and they're saying that optimization often concentrates on that, and in a sense that's like playing football, and the only strategy you've got is running in a straight line down the middle towards your opponent's goal. Whereas, you know, and maybe you got a 2% would be an average conversion rate. So you've got this 98% of other people who wanted something else that you didn't provide. So once you've got a smooth route to the thank you page, and that whole funnel is optimized, your best use of time is to look at the other 98% and start thinking about where, how you can satisfy them and what else you can do. And so you end up with a much more complex and a much more nuanced route to market for many of those people who may not be ready to buy now. They may want information, they may want to keep in touch, they may want to learn something, and eventually you'll sell to them. So it's really just a reminder that to think more widely about conversion. From Groundswell, the idea of Wikipedia discouraging people from contributing to their own page. So if you're Nike, then on the face of it, you're not supposed to be writing the Nike Wikipedia page. That's probably a good thing. And obviously people do that by wearing a moustache while they do it and so on. I found this as well when I was publicising hair loss treatment with a very, I have to say, reputable company. And I was shot down pretty much every time in the forums, because I came from that kind of side of the tracks, as it were. I wasn't, you know, a bald guy helping another bald guy. And that, you know, I kept kind of hitting my head against that because it seemed ridiculous. Surely, if we have a clinic that treats baldness day in, day out successfully, we have something to contribute to the forums, and it shouldn't be automatic or automatically assumed that we're spamming the forums. I felt very genuine in what I was saying and very genuine in trying to help and give advice. But obviously others felt differently, and, you know, so I needed to adjust the tone of it or whatever. But, and it must be the same kind of rules for Wikipedia, that you can contribute to your own page if you are transparent and if you do it in a properly helpful way, then it's probably possible to get through and contribute to your own Wikipedia page. If you try and trick Wikipedia, then you're going to get found out. So that's the strategy for kind of contributing to a page, because you do have, if you're Nike, you know, you probably do have your annual results, as you know, you can put those up, the things that you know, that obviously those are public, but there are going to be things that you know that others don't, and so you can contribute those things, I guess. This is your favourite from yesterday. It's the idea that, the fact, it seems, that Twitter no longer links to LinkedIn. Now, there's a bit of a shift going on with Twitter, it seems. It seems they want to be a bit more controlling than they have been, that they want to perhaps... what it's coming out as is a little bit of bad feeling within the app development community, because Twitter's popularity has been fueled by an open API, which means that programmers can get access to it and do things with it. If Twitter is going to take that popularity from all of those people and close some of those things down and put their arms around it themselves, that's going to promote bad feelings. So there's a bit of a bit of careful management that Twitter needs to go through. But anyway, they've shut out LinkedIn, and that's a good thing, because LinkedIn's newsfeed, as soon as there was a Twitter link, just got filled with people's Twitter stuff, and that cheapened it. It made it ridiculous, because it was suddenly just full. You know, you can follow somebody on Twitter. If you want to follow their Twitter stream, follow their Twitter stream, but there's no point. You know, LinkedIn was a different thing. It was a different audience, and the messages were different. And they came from people who were working LinkedIn. And so, you know, they were targeted to LinkedIn users, and they were more relevant, I guess. Whereas once people filled it all out with Twitter, it was just cheap and horrible. So that's a good thing. Now, there are two John Allsops. Actually, there's three that I found. There's one who's in networking in Germany. But the big John Allsop is the guy on Bondi Beach in Australia. He's the guy who's an expert in microformats, in CSS, in HTML. So he's the guy who's written the books. He's the guy who speaks at conferences. I once tried in one of my placement years at uni, no, one of my summers, I kind of thought, well, he's called John Allsop, and with the Allsops, having two L's and two P's is the kind of rarer version, and he has two L's and two P's, and so do I, and we were kind of almost exactly at opposite ends of the globe, but he was very much making a name for himself in this world, and I was learning about it, so I did kind of get in touch with him at one point and thought, well, this will be nice. I'll spend my summer, but their winter on just off Bondi Beach, and there can be two John Allsops in this office, and I can make his tea or whatever. He declined my kind offer because there wasn't any work to do. But anyway, there are two John Allsops, and he's written, and this is actually from ages ago, I think from perhaps about around that time, kind of 2000, 2001 maybe, he wrote this article called a DAO, D-A-O, of web design. And what it talks about is And you know, I mean, we're a decade on from here, but it's still relevant. The idea that when you move from one medium to another, you take some good things from that medium and some things that are irrelevant, and it takes a while for those irrelevant things to get dropped out and lost. And the point about the web and and publishing on the web is that in every other medium prior to the web, you had boundaries. The page has boundaries, the screen has boundaries. With the web, we don't know what size of screen you're going to be using. We don't know what size of screen you're going to be using 5 years hence. You may not be using a screen. You may have, and I've seen these working, a text-to-speech synthesizer. If you're blind or partially sighted, you won't have a screen. You'll have it read to you. The point about the web is to deliver information in a usable manner, and then it's up to the user to display it in the way that they want to display it. So some will use an iPad, some will use a smartphone, some will use a desktop computer, whether it's Mac or Linux or Windows or whatever. Some will have huge screens. You know, I've got a client who's got five screens all linked together across his desk. So, you know, how big is that screen? So the web has to be flexible and not prescriptive about things like layout. It just has to be prescriptive about the kind of information that it's delivering and the relative importance of different pieces of information. So that's what that article's about. It's a good read. Have a read of it. It's on a list apart, and it's a DAO of web design. So give that a read. And finally, I've just set up on JustGiving. I'm doing a charity thing, and I've just set up on JustGiving a page for people to donate for multiple sclerosis. What is it? The second page in, I think, as you're setting it up, it says it prompts you to say I'm doing bleh, and you fill that out because bleh. And the field it gives you is endless. Now, way back to the very first definition of HTML, fields can be limited in length, and it's just a question of putting that number in to the definition of the field in the HTML when you're doing the web page. And it's incredibly basic that that should be there. Partly because if you leave it as an infinitely sized field, it leaves the door open for crackers to break your website. So it's a security thing to start with. All data inbound should be verified. But as a usability thing, so I wrote actually about 400 characters. Carefully crafted, worked it all out, what I wanted to say, typed it all in. It was great, I felt good about it. Clicked OK, and it said, "Oh, you've only got 50 characters." Well, how incredibly annoying, and what's the word? Disrespectful is that. For the want of just putting in the code, size equals 50, and that's all that was needed. And then in that field where I, as soon as I hit 50, it would have stopped me. It let me carry on, and I could have spent 5 minutes. I could have spent a quarter of an hour writing the perfect why, because it's obviously something I would feel passionate about, or I wouldn't be doing it. So they didn't care enough to put that code limit in that field and had me and everyone else write a load of text and then rejected it with a JavaScript. I mean, that, you know, there's a JavaScript there to say, oh, there's 50 characters, is your limit there. Well, the JavaScript wasn't necessary because you just need the size equals 50 on the, in the HTML. So it's crap beyond belief is what it is. And equally crap is the fact that I've said it on my Twitter. Let me just check. At 7 o'clock last night, and it's now 12:39, and I will just check, but I don't think I've had a reply, because I actually mentioned their Twitter handle in that tweet. So, no, I haven't had a reply yet. So, you know, great, it, you know, it's good that the service is there, but that's so small and yet so big, shockingly bad usability, bad security. That's it, I've stopped moaning now. Well, just to say, really summarise, if there's a limit to the length of a field, always put the limit in the HTML and stop people from typing more than you're going to allow them later on. That's it for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk tomorrow. Bye-bye.